few reasons for planning a preaching calendar. Number one, planning allows for balance. Planning allows for balance. I can't say it any better than it's written in your notes. Without an intentional plan to balance the five purposes in your preaching, you will preach primarily on the purpose you are most passionate about. Picking up again on the purpose-driven church and Rick's modern-day application, I think, of the book of Acts. There are five biblical purposes of the church. Does anybody remember what those are? Worship, discipleship, missions, evangelism, fellowship, and service. Or the way I learned it, worship, evangelism, discipleship, fellowship, and ministry. So those five purposes, keeping those in balance. I believe balancing those five purposes leads to a healthy church. Now, most of you in this room are more passionate about one or the other. I happen to be passionate about evangelism. One summer in college, I attended this church, great church, really doing a lot of great stuff, a lot of people coming to Christ in the church. But it was clear the pastor's heart was evangelism. Because it didn't matter where he started, the last 15 minutes were going to be on evangelism. You know this guy? Has he taught at your church before? And, he could start about something with the temple and, something in Leviticus or whatever. But his last 15 minutes were going to be about evangelism. It just didn't matter. And, it didn't matter what he was talking about. And he didn't have a plan for balancing that. Like, they were evangelism rich and ministry poor. Nobody ever taught them to serve. They were constantly trying to get volunteers for the children's area. They were constantly trying to get people to serve in the parking lot because he was always teaching on evangelism. So you've got to look at these five purposes. And if you want to have some fun, for those of you who are teaching pastors, go back and pull out the folders of your messages from the last several years, maybe the last 3 years, and tag everyone as an evangelism, discipleship, fellowship, or ministry sermon. And see how many you have. So put all your evangelism sermons in one pile, evangelism sermons in another, ministry sermons in one, discipleship sermons in one, and fellowship sermons in another. And if you don't have a plan for balancing that, one of those stacks is going to be really high. And so you may have a great discipleship church, but nobody loves each other because it's been so long since you taught on fellowship. You see what I'm talking about? And so you've got to have a plan. So the preaching calendar allows you to have a plan. So every sermon series and every sermon should be tagged with a purpose. And that leads to balance, which balance leads to health. You see, the issue for growing a church is not how do I get my church to grow. The issue is how do I get my church healthy. And so if there's not health in the pulpit, there's going to be disease in the pew. Now, I don't like pews. You've already determined that. So anyway, you know where I'm going with this. So you've got to have balance. You've got to have health. And you need to have health as well in your preaching. And so the preaching calendar allows for balance because balance leads to health. Health leads to growth. Next, planning allows for greater creativity. Greater creativity. I said it earlier, I'll say it again. It's very hard to be creative at the last minute. We've tried, You call somebody up on a Saturday night, hey, I got this great idea. That would be a great idea if I had 3 weeks to put it together. It's really hard to be creative at the last minute. So if you know what you're teaching on, if you can give your team some rope, make your own analogy. If you can give your team some rope, they can be creative when it comes to this. It's hard to pull movie clips at the last minute. It's impossible to put together a drama at the last minute. It's very difficult to try to put together a dance at the last minute. You just can't do it. So the further out you know, the more creative you can be. This is why planning does not stifle creativity. This is what my friend last night from Charlotte called to tell me. He's like, look, you tell him tomorrow that all this stuff about planning is not to stifle creativity, but planning promotes creativity. Planning allows for creativity. Planning creates creativity. The next one, number three, planning allows for greater depth in my preaching. Greater depth in my preaching. Now, the next couple are ones that I experienced a lot in my early part of my ministry that to be deep means you be last minute. That was sort of the unimplied statement that if you're going to be deep with your preaching, you got to just lean on the Holy Spirit at the last minute. We had all kinds of little jokes. I used to have a little cartoon of this little pastor guy who's stepping up into his pulpit. He's opening up his notes, and in his mind, he's saying, God, you blessed this sermon when Spurgeon preached it. Bless it today. That was his thing. And If you're Owen, you just ain't never been there, okay? Because I've been there, Lord, you blessed this message when Ed Young gave it, and I pray you'll bless it today. But, depth comes over time. your sermon is like a good steak. It has to marinate over time. And you know, if you really want to learn the ins and outs of what you're teaching, if you really want to go deep in your teaching, you can't just put it together at the last minute. This New Testament Challenge series. Well, let me tell you another one. A couple years ago, I did a verse by verse teaching 8 weeks through the Beatitudes. You probably all taught on the Beatitudes. And we called it 40 Days with Jesus, because 40 days and all that stuff was real popular, and we had done 40 Days of Purpose, so we did 40 Days with Jesus. And it was just a verse-by-verse, 8 weeks on the Beatitudes. I didn't realize this, but like a year prior to that, my wife and I had gone on a vacation, and we always try to have a little spiritual exercise on our vacation. And that year, we felt like we should read through the Sermon on the Mount. And so every day for 7 days on this vacation, we read through the Sermon on the Mount, just what we felt like we should do. When I got back from vacation, I felt like God wanted me to do that in my quiet time. And so for about the next 3 months, every day, I read the Sermon on the Mount. Sometimes out loud, sometimes I would listen to it, but I just really read it. I had no idea that when we came to our planning calendar time, at the time when we were planning our preaching calendar, that God was going to lead us the next year to do a whole message series on the Sermon on the Mount. But God was preparing this the whole time. Because, see, I'm kind of slow. I need a lot of ramp up to teach on something. And so, you know, if you know what you're teaching on, it allows you to collect more information. It allows you to do a greater study. It allows you to listen to what other people have said. It allows you to read commentaries. You really got to have it. Depth in preaching, no doubt, comes from advanced study and preparation. And so greater depth in your preaching through having a calendar. Next, I always heard this one too. Planning allows for the Holy Spirit to work in advance as well as the day of. I used to always hear, you know, if you shouldn't plan, you should just trust the Spirit. Well, I finally learned that the same Spirit who's going to lead me on Saturday night is the same Spirit that's going to lead me 3 Saturday nights before, okay? So you can plan in advance. You know, the Holy Spirit already knows. Carrick and I learned this lesson. I think we share this on the preaching calendar CD. We felt led early on in the life of the church here at The Journey to do a series on the Lord's Prayer. And it's going to be a verse-by-verse series to the Lord's Prayer. And in our planning for the preaching calendar, we felt like we should call that title The Path to Peace in the City. That was going to be the series title. Now, I don't like titles like that. That was a little too feminine for me, but that's really what we felt led to do it. I like, you know, these stronger titles or whatever, but The Path to Peace in the City. And I'm like, okay, that's definitely what we think we should do, but I don't know, you know, peace in the city, path to peace in the city. I'm not sure about it. But we launched that that sermon on the Sunday after the war broke out in Afghanistan. And so, you know, this was 2002, you know, 9/11, the follow-up and all that kind of stuff. And so, like, people came to church that weekend, they're like, wow, how did you put all this together? You know, the war just broke out. How did you put this series together called The Path to Peace in the City so quickly? Well, we didn't put it together, you know, that week. We didn't have time to put it together that week. You know, friends in the church were being deployed. We didn't know that. But months in advance, the Holy Spirit had brought that together. And I'm telling you, that has happened now so many times that I've just come to expect that. Like I've always been tempted to change something at the last minute. Let's change it at the last minute. But I've almost always regretted that. I like to allow room for God to change in the calendar, but and normally God knows in advance exactly what needs to teach. Another example: a couple of years ago, we were doing a September stewardship series, and I'd heard about a lot of churches who were giving money away. You heard about this? And so I was going to be teaching on money, so I thought, okay, the first sermon that we're going to do, we're going to give everybody money. That would have been a good day to be a guest at our church. And so our executive pastor goes down to the bank, and he gets, like, all these fives and tens and 20s and 50s and hundreds, and we put them in these little envelopes with a little note from our church saying, you're accountable for how you spend this money, and let us know, when we had a website and all this stuff. So anyway, we were planning to do that, and we had planned to do this like months in advance. Because I don't know if you've tried to go into a New York City bank and tell them you want like 720s or not, but you know, it takes a while for this kind of thing to happen. And we'd been planning this, we'd been building this website, we'd been planning toward the series. Well, guess what happened that week on Labor Day Monday before the Sunday where I was teaching this? You remember what happened? Hurricane Katrina came through. And Katrina, you know, came through and wiped out that area of the South down around the Gulf Coast and all that stuff. So on Sunday, we're giving money away. And all of these reporters and different people in the city came to see what The Journey was going to have to say about the hurricane. You know, did we think it was God's judgment? Because remember, some people were saying stuff like that. Did we think it was this? Did we think it was that? And so instead, what we were able to do is we got up and we gave out money that day. And actually, our church, even though we only gave out something like $6,000 or $7,000 by the time he added it all up, just to Hurricane Katrina relief, they gave almost $20,000. Because we said, hey, take the $5 that you got or the $50 you got and match that or double it or increase it and then give it to whatever you want to give to. And they didn't have to give to Katrina. They could give to whatever they wanted to. But over $20,000 was given to Katrina because a lot of people took the $5, put $95 with it, and shipped it off down to the Gulf Coast area. And so all that was in advance. That's happened over and over and over. Does that make sense? I'm telling you, the Holy Spirit can work in advance and can work more powerfully in advance. But the Holy Spirit also works the day of. Now, I may not change the sermon or change the series, but I'll make little tweaks the day of. Change illustrations, change clips, change whatever. We'll talk about that. Planning allows for maximum results. Planning allows for maximum results. Planning my preaching calendar means organizing my sermon series in a way that brings maximum life change. There is a way to do that. There is a way to structure and cooperate with the calendar. And I'm going to talk about that after we do the break. So, Roy, if you want to come on up. The fastest period of growth in the history of the church has been when the church has cooperated with the systems of society. And we live in a day right now where the church is competing with societal systems. And so we have a church calendar and we have a school calendar. We have Christian music and we have regular music, you know. We have Christian radio stations, we have regular radio stations. We have Christian TV, we have regular television. And so actually, church right now is competing with society. But when you read like Michael Green's book, Evangelism in the Early Church, you find that the church grew the fastest when it cooperated or when it rode the systems of society and piggybacked on those systems instead of competing against it. And so I think it's possible to do that with your calendar. The American education system has taught us to think a certain way. It's taught us to start something new in the fall, take a break around Christmas time, get back at the swing of things in February, take a spring break around Easter, and then take the summer off. And if you will ride that and use that natural stress and release of your calendar to impact life change in your church and to build balance in your church and to bring about, how you balance between new people and existing people in your church, then that can make you very effective and can create maximum results. So we're going to pick up right there when we come back from the break. So we're on page 8. For those of you who fell asleep just before the break, and I know who you are. I've got your name on a sheet of paper somewhere. So we talked about maximum results. And as we wrapped up, I was talking about how you can actually piggyback on the natural calendar and use that to maximize results. I want to show you an example of that. But before I do, I want to let you know there are three types of message series that we're talking about. As you plan your preaching calendar, we're really talking about planning the message series that you want to do over the next year. And so I find this breakdown to be helpful. There's three types of message series. One message series is called Attraction, an Attraction message series. And this might be a 4 to 6 part series, perhaps on sex. I love to do a whole message series on sex. It's hard to really beat sex as an attraction. Like half of you have not paid attention for the last half hour and you just now looked up because I just said the magic S word. I like to do a sex series in February, and February is a big divorce time in America. It's also a time around Valentine's Day, so you can really tie in the whole sex series to that. And also, if you do a sex series in February, you can expand your children's ministry in the fall. So it really kind of has a whole double whammy kind of thing going. But Americans recently said they would like for church to talk on two things more. Number one, they'd like for the church to talk about sex more. Number two, they'd like for the church to talk about money more. That's really kind of interesting, isn't it? Now, I don't know what you want to say about sex for money or something like that. I'm not sure, but you might want to say a word or two about that too. But, you know, some kind of high felt need attraction series. Thanks for getting that joke. You're the one guy who got my joke about that, so thank you. But these attraction series are not just for the unchurched. Your people need to hear these series as well. And so they're attractive to the church and the unchurched. And then you want to do growth series. These are a series that require high commitment. The series we're in right now, the New Testament Challenge, that's a growth series. I recently did a series that maybe some of you have used called Vertical, which was all about prayer, and that was a growth series. 40 Days with Jesus, that was a growth series I was talking about earlier with the Beatitudes and all. I've done verse-by-verse growth series. I don't know if we have this one here, but I did a series one time on Philippians chapter 2. Just went verse by verse through that about being a servant, and it was called Positive Living. So it doesn't have to be all topical. It can be verse by verse or verse with verse, however you feel like teaching. And then there needs to be some balance series as well. And balance, these are just important issues that you need to deal with. These are topics that are designed to mature believers and to inform unbelievers. These are topics that come up naturally in the life of your church. Sometimes they're vision messages that you just need to do. Sometimes they're hot topic issues. I did a message one time called, "What Do I Say to a Friend Who's Gay?" And that was I needed to teach on that. I didn't want to do a whole series on it, but I needed to bring balance on that. Sometimes I've had people submit their questions, like, what are the big issues you'd like for us to talk about? And I've done balance series around that. But the best sermon series, as you see the note, are about 4 to 6 weeks. So if you look at the course of a calendar, you've got anywhere from, 8 to 10 series that you're going to do over the course of a year. And you want to plan those out around the purposes, around these three different types of series. Let me try to illustrate that on page 9. On page 9, you see just a rough outline of a preaching calendar example. Starting in January, I like to start the year either with a balance series or with a growth series. I think you should always teach on money at least once in January, because there's a huge felt need when it comes to debt, and people are getting their Christmas bills and they're broke in January. Money is a big argument in January, so it's always good to do something like that. And you can tie in a growth series with that. But the key word for January is core values. I often like to use January to define the whole year, like what I want the people to do this entire year. Knowing that we were going into the New Testament challenge this fall, I introduced a challenge back in January called the First 15 Challenge. And I challenged people to give the first 15 minutes of their day to God. And so that was a theme from January all the way through the beginning of this New Testament challenge. So if they were naturally giving their first 15 to God, now they just start reading the New Testament for 15 minutes. It really worked out well. I've done giving challenges to give God the first part of your income. I've done small group challenges. You can have all these different challenges, but what are the themes you want to go out through the year? And how could you set that at the beginning of the year and then talk about that all year? Imagine the power of that if your people are constantly being challenged on some area of discipleship or growth all year in January. February is a great time to do an attraction series. The key word there is felt needs. March, leading up to Easter, is a great time to do a maturity series or a growth series. I like to put a growth series right after an attraction series. So one year we did a whole series, I think it was like, I don't remember what it was called, Roommates, Bad Dates, and Great Mates, I think it was, in February, and then that rolled right into a prayer series. And that way you kind of got the horizontal relationships with each other, and then you got the vertical relationship with God. It's kind of a nice 1-2 punch leading up to Easter. I've often done series in March that are around Lent. And I know this sounds weird for a non-denominational church to say, but I like to focus on Lent and get our people to pray and fast over the course of Lent. And then that leads up to inviting your friends on Easter. And you can kind of work that into your calendar as well. And then the problem with Easter is that it moves around a lot. And, it can be in late March. It can be in early April. Where's this thing going to be? And so that can really affect your preaching calendar as to where Easter is going to be. The key on Easter is to always start a new series on Easter. The traditional thinking about Easter was to use a sermon series to build up to Easter, and the final message is Easter Sunday. Well, the problem with that is you've got more people coming to your church for the first time on Easter than any other Sunday of the year, and they're kind of like, oh, great, I missed the last 6 weeks. This would have probably been a great series if I'd heard the previous 6 weeks. So instead, start a new series and challenge them to stay with you for the next 3 or 4 weeks. And you can actually use that as a way to assimilate new people into your church. And so maybe you start an attraction series based around life application, perhaps on Easter. These are just thoughts to kind of get you thinking. May in the Northeast is a great time to do a growth series or a balance series. I think last year we did an Old Testament series around May, because I tend to be too New Testament oriented, so I need to bring some balance and do an Old Testament. One year we did a lot of kind of theology, so we did a whole series on character studies, like biographies of the Old Testament. So you just kind of look at the flow and see what you need to bring balance to. I think May is a great time to go deep on a particular issue, deep on a person, deep on a topic. June and July in the Northeast is especially difficult because school's out. And people travel, and they all the rich people, go to their vacation homes, and all the rest of us go to Jones Beach or whatever. It's a difficult time. So I have always wondered what you do in June and July. I like to do a longer series in the summer, but one that doesn't require you to have been there the previous week. So there's kind of like a collection of standalone messages, but it goes over the course of a summer. So they don't build on each other. They just kind of stand alone. I've done a popular series called God on Film a couple of summers where we just take movies and we look at different themes. That's always been a big hit in the summer because the big movies come out. I'm thinking about doing one on the Ten Commandments. I think that'd be a great thing to do in the summer because each commandment kind of stands alone in a way. But, you know, standalone, attraction, growth, kind of it's a free-for-all in June and July. August is a great time for balance. Now, for those who are listening and school starts back in August, you would have to adjust this just a little bit. And then September growth, October, November, and on down through December. But you see how just thinking through your calendar for the whole year will really help you maximize that. I think it's important to start a new series on Easter. I think it's important to do an attraction series in February. And I think it's important to do an attraction series 1 month after school starts back. And that's that way you can maximize your growth. Because really what you're trying to do with these attraction series is you're trying to create two other Easters. So the kickoff to your series in February and the kickoff to your series 1 month after school starts back and making those big friend day, big high attendance days. Because unchurched people, they don't come to your church in January. All the Christians who move to the area come to your church in January. But about 1 month into this, they're getting settled in their routine and they can now start thinking about coming to your church. And I go into this in greater detail in the evangelism seminar as well. But you really want to work that together. Now, let's look at some preaching calendar tips. And then I'll answer some questions here before we get to the next big area. Preaching calendar tips. Schedule a yearly time away to work on your preaching calendar. Sometimes this can be a retreat. Last year, some of our teaching folks got together and we did like a one-day retreat. This year, it's been more of a series of smaller meetings. Carrick and I were actually working on next year's calendar a little bit yesterday, and we got up through Easter, and you know, we're still going back and forth, even between the break. He was telling me about some ideas he had on our preaching calendar for next year. But October, November, good time to plan for the following year in that way. Pray and fast before and or during your planning time. Pray and fast. I think all of us in here believe in prayer. But also make fasting a part of it. You know, whoever's going to go on this retreat with you, lead them to do a fast, maybe 1 day a week, 3 weeks before you go, or maybe a couple days, something like that, as you go along. Then this is important. Bring a regular calendar with key holidays and a school calendar. Key holidays and a school calendar. Working your sermon series around the school calendar is a pretty good thing to do because, like it or not, the school calendar is going to determine when people in your church go on vacation. And so you can try to work against that, but you might as well work with it. I think you can get the same results with greater impact by working with the school calendar than working against it. I don't think there's anything, you know, ungodly about working with the school calendar. But you want to have key holidays. We made a mistake just recently. A couple of weeks ago, we kicked off this New Testament Challenge series I was telling you about, and we kicked it off on Columbus Day weekend. Now, for people who are listening to this recording who maybe live down south or live out west, they say, what's the big deal about Columbus Day weekend? Well, you know, in the Northeast, that's a huge holiday. And so we should have started the series a week later or a week earlier. And so that wasn't a great day to kick off our big fall growth series. Likewise, like Memorial Day, not a good day to kick off your new series because it's going to be kind of a low day. That's a great day to actually have a guest speaker in to your church, and you kind of take that week off. That's true, you know. Super Bowl Sunday. Not a great day to kick off your big February attraction series. So you kind of want to know these key holidays as to when they fall. And some of them are tricky, you know, and so you have to do a little research. But have these with you when you go plan your preaching calendar. Next, bring attendance trends from the previous 2 years. What were the natural high days that you had the previous year? First couple of years when I started the journey, I had people tell me that Labor Day weekend is really low. And so never preach on Labor Day weekend. So the first couple of years, I always scheduled somebody else to preach on Labor Day weekend. And then I found out that actually Labor Day weekend, even though it's not as big as some of the days, is actually a pretty big day around here. Well, I didn't know that till I had the trend. So now I'm almost always up teaching. Sometimes I've even kicked off a series on Labor Day weekend, even though for, you know, maybe people in Atlanta, that would be a very bad thing to do to kick off on Labor Day weekend. And just the way the calendar falls here, that works out pretty well. So you got to kind of know these trends. We found out that sometimes our highest attendance after the summer is like the second weekend in September. So how could we maximize that? By kicking off a new series or bringing in a big-name speaker. This year we brought in Lee Strobel on that second week in September, and it really caused our attendance to spike, having a big-name speaker or something like that. So you just kind of look at these trends and use that to maximize your calendar. you know, if you're doing a series that's just going to be for your members, what are the times where just your members are going to be there? You know, these are not necessarily the times where you have a lot of first-time guests, but you have a real consistent attendance, but it's not a big attraction time. Like for us, that's May. Like in May, we have pretty steady attendance, but we don't have high first-time numbers. And so that's a really good time to go after people who have been around the church for a while. Same thing with early January. Early January is, for us, and this may not be the same for you, but for us is a time where the attendance is pretty good, but we don't have high first-time attenders. The first-timers really don't seem to kick in to the third week, fourth week, and into early February. And so that's a really good time for me to talk to people just in our church about something. So you can kind of look at these trends and use that to focus on your calendar. I put this one in for me. Re-listen to planning a one-year preaching calendar. Now, I know, you know, I did that, Carrick and I did it together, but when you're putting together a resource like that, you put all this energy and effort into making sure everything is in the resource, and then you forget. Like, I teach myself all the time by listening to my old seminars, and, you know, because I can't think of everything. I put, you know, hours, maybe hundreds of hours into planning this seminar today. I can't remember everything, you know, 2 months from now that I taught in this seminar, so I have to go back and listen to it. If I had gone back and listened to the preaching calendar, a few months ago, I never would have planned the kickoff for the New Testament Challenge on Columbus Day weekend, but I just got slack, and so that led to lack when it comes to the calendar. Next, and you can read some of these for yourself, plan as a team, that's very important. Brainstorm key topics or issues. I always like to come to our planning time with some key topics or issues that I feel like we need to address. Last year, I remember I felt like we needed to address the issue of divorce in our church. So I brought that to the topic, and we actually worked it into a series we did called Relationship Rescue. Outline the key start and end dates for each series. Again, be sure to include guest speakers, holidays, standalone dates. Focus on February and October. A better way to say that might be February and 1 month after school starts back in the fall, in case that's not October for you. Remember the September trio. That month after school starts back is a great time to rotate through a three-year process. Year one, you teach an evangelism series. Year two, you preach a ministry series. Year three, you preach a stewardship series. This is in the in other seminars that I have. But these three, this trio of evangelism, ministry, and stewardship, on a rotating basis, once a year, make sure you teach a whole series on at least one of those. Because most churches don't do a whole series on evangelism, but about every 3 years you should. Most churches don't do a whole series on ministry, but every 3 years you should. Most churches don't do a whole series on stewardship, but every 3 years you should. And that just helps bring balance over the course, not of a year, but over the course of multiple years. Does that make sense? Here's one. Keep all unused ideas for the future. Keep all unused ideas for the future. Sometimes you have something, you're in a planning meeting, and you don't think, I'm going to use it this year. Well, save it for next year. You know, save it for future years. Always capture the ideas and keep those around. Just because it doesn't make its way into the calendar now doesn't mean God won't bring it back in a few years. So keep those ideas, and you can draw from that year after year. And then don't worry if there are gaps. If you could see our preaching calendar for last year, sometimes we just have a you know, series to be determined, these dates to these dates. Sometimes there's gaps. Sometimes we have a series and it's just called a sex series. We don't know what the title's going to be yet. So we don't know what that's going to be called. Sometimes we have a series that, like, for many months we were calling this New Testament Challenge series the New Testament Challenge. We didn't think that was going to be the name of it. We just thought it was going to be a challenge to read the New Testament. Then that actually became the name of the series itself. So you can have gaps in your calendar, but don't worry about that. Just keep moving and fill in as many pieces as you can. Sometimes I've been 2 months out and not know what I'm preaching on, but that's okay. You know, at least you know something of what you're doing. So don't worry about the gaps. Don't forget to schedule in the times you will be away. That's a good place to start. Your vacation time is very important. I talk about this in the one-year personal growth plan. You can't be fresh 52 times a year. That would be this is for some of you, this is going to be a big step over the next year, just not to preach every Sunday. And so, you know, start out preaching 50 weeks and then move it down to 45 and then try to get that down to 40 and raise up new teachers from within or bring in outside speakers to help you. Set aside the draft calendar for a couple of weeks and revisit it. Once you kind of lay all this out, leave it aside, pray about it, then revisit it. Make sure you still agree. And then revisit the calendar as often as you need to stay 2 to 3 months ahead. That's kind of your goal, to always be 2 to 3 months ahead of where you're going in the preaching calendar. Everybody with me? Last one. Allow God to interrupt your calendar. Allow God to interrupt your calendar. I still remember recently we were planning a preaching calendar for a year, and we had this time in May we didn't really know what to do with. And we knew we needed to do something on the Old Testament, but we didn't know exactly what it should be. And, you know, in the midst of all this, in the midst of praying, we felt like we should spend 3 weeks on Cain and Abel. Now, Cain and Abel are very well known, but you know, there's only a few verses on Cain and Abel. Hardly enough to build a whole three-part series around that. But we actually did, you know, and God sort of interrupted that and said, do the whole 3 weeks on Cain and Abel. And that was a stretch for our team to cover just that few amount of verses and stretch that over a three-month or three-week series was a really big thing to do. Now, I've been accused of stretching an 18-minute sermon into 25 minutes, but still, you know, to stretch three or four verses into 3 weeks, that was pretty good. So you let God interrupt your calendar, you know, and God can redirect you. But also make sure you hear from God clearly, but keep that balance of letting him interrupt you. Okay, questions on preaching calendar so far? Yes. How often do you do a standalone sermon? I think, you know, every so often. How's that for clarity? Now, I like to go series to series, ideally. But there are natural breaks. Like January, the first Sunday in January almost is always a standalone. People are just coming back from that. Christmas, the Sunday either on Christmas or closest to Christmas, sometimes is a standalone, even though it may be packaged as part of the whole series. Memorial Day is often a standalone. Sometimes in August, just before school starts, is a standalone. I think it's really up to you. I wouldn't get into a pattern of doing a standalone series, because sometimes you can end one series and have momentum going into the next. Like in that last sermon of a series, you want to make a handoff to the next series. And so tell why the next series is important and why you're doing what you're doing. So just kind of work it into your calendar. But standalones are good days to bring in a guest speaker. I don't like to bring in a guest speaker and make them fit into our series. You know, because they may not know what the big idea is, but let them come in and teach their sugar stick, you know. Good. Yeah. I don't usually break a series in half. You know, I just would not schedule a guest speaker because I feel like if they don't fit what we feel like God's saying for us to do, you know. But there are guest speakers that I feel comfortable putting into a series. You know, because they know our culture and they've been here enough to fit into a series. So we'll do that sometimes too. Just on that, I almost always teach the kickoff message in a series. Put your main guy up to teach on the kickoff. And usually on your big challenge Sundays, I like to be up too, for those of you who have multiple teachers. Yeah. It's a great question. In regard to the five purposes, have there been certain seasons that are better to teach on a certain purpose? Like I think that September is a great time to do like an evangelism series, and then that people can use that to reach their friends in the fall. I find that like fellowship is a great early January, because fellowship is really designed for your people. So if you know, whenever the attendance is steady but you're not reaching a lot of first-time guests, it's a good time to do a fellowship series or a ministry series. Obviously you want to do evangelism at a time where you can really reach people. Or prepare to reach people. So if you're doing a big attraction series in October, you might use September to do evangelism. So yeah, I found that there's some rules like that. I probably would not do a whole like discipleship series in the summer, because the discipleship series by nature kind of builds on itself. So people are in and out, you know, all summer. Now maybe that's not true in your area. It might be very consistent in your area, but and you know, if they're in and out all summer, it's hard to get that momentum of a discipleship series. So that might be a better balanced series. Or something like that. So, yeah, you can kind of look at that. You know, missions, you know, you kind of got certain times, like December is always good to talk about missions, do an end-of-the-year offering or something like that. So, yeah, it's probably unique to your church, but there are different times. It's good. Let's turn over and go to number three, which is preparing and conducting the services. And we're in good shape. We're on time. This is a big section, and then the last section is pretty short. This will have to be for discussion. Some of this, the next couple of pages I put in here are for you to discuss and are kind of drafts for you to edit. So you'll notice there's not a lot of fill-ins on page 11, but step number three in our worship planning system is preparing and conducting the services. So you've planned your calendar, you've determined your philosophy. Now it's actually time to do something with it. You know, you got to get ready for Sunday. You got to get ready for this coming. In your notes, it says, each Sunday is like the tip of an iceberg. The strength and impact of that Sunday will be determined by what happens below the waterline in planning and preparation. I don't like to leave a lot to chance on Sunday. Sunday should be determined well before Sunday happens. And so what you do 2 months out, 2 weeks out, 2 days out, even 2 hours out, is going to make Sunday a home run or not. I like to go into Sunday relaxed. I like to go into Sunday feeling prepared. I mean, you know that feeling? It doesn't happen very often, but when it happens, never had that. But it feels really good when it can happen. It's not that you're not focused or you're not intense about what you want to teach on that day, but at least you feel like you're ready, and that feels really good. So here's some questions for you. These are questions for you to answer. How far in advance will I plan each series? How far in advance? We're talking about planning a year in advance if possible. But maybe you make it your goal to plan 2 months in advance. How far in advance will you have specific titles of the message? Sometimes I have the topics, but not the titles. How far in advance will you have the graphics? Sometimes we don't have the graphics till maybe a month out, but sometimes, you know, a couple weeks out, honestly. When will you have key scriptures? You know, your focus may be more on the scripture than on the title. But just how far in advance will you have those? Set a goal for yourself. Then how far in advance will I plan each sermon? Now we're not talking about a series, but we're talking about specific week-to-week sermons. How far in advance will you have the title of Sunday sermon? How far in advance will you have the scriptures for Sunday? How far in advance will you have the creative elements for Sunday? How far in advance will you have the outline for Sunday? 4 or 5 years ago, I didn't have to have my outline in until, you know, Thursday at noon. If we had it in Thursday at noon, they could send it out, it could be printed, it would be there on Sunday because I used to fill in the blank notes. So you got to have an outline. You got to turn it in to get it printed in advance. Well, then it became like Wednesday at noon. Now I'm down to, I pretty much got to have that thing Monday at noon. Because as the system gets bigger and your church gets larger, you got to have that in advance. Now, that's not always the case. At Saddleback, sometimes Rick didn't get his in until Saturday at noon. So we printed everything else, and then on Saturday, because they had a print shop in the church, we could do that. But most of us, you know, we have to be a little bit ahead of that. So, you know, it doesn't matter what you do as long as you're consistent. I like to have a little buffer, you know. I like to have a little more buffer than Saturday at noon. But, you know, you can figure that out. Now, you don't have to do printed notes. If that's not your style, you know, you don't have to do that, of course. But these are good questions to ask. How far in advance will I finalize each Sunday? Now, you've got the sermon, you got the series, you got the titles, you got the topics, you got the scriptures, you got the outlines. When is everything going to be finalized? When's the music going to be finalized? When's the worship order going to be finalized? When are you going to have the media clips pulled? When are you going to have the drama rehearsed? The creative elements. When are you going to have your manuscript? I'm a big fan of having a manuscript for teaching. Even if you don't use it, I think writing it out is important. So you can disagree or whatever on that, but I don't like to wing anything. You like to think it through. So those are questions for you to ask. So here's something for you to consider. This is a draft of what I would call a series planning timeline. So let's just pick a series. Let's look for one back here on the let's do iGod. We saw the roll-in for iGod during the break. So let's say we're planning iGod as a series. So 4 to 10 months out, you should have the series idea or the series title. So let's say we're doing iGod next month. That means 4 to 10 months ago, we would have come up with the idea. And so we had the idea of iGod, and we had the idea of doing a theology series. Obviously, this is a growth series. It's a discipleship series. And so 4 to 10 months out, we would have had that. 1 month out, we would have come up with the individual titles. This series is based around the I Ams of Scripture. And so we have four I Ams. I, God, am all present. I, God, am all powerful. I, God, am all knowing. I, God, am all loving. This is a short series, 4 weeks, or four sermons. So 1 month out, we would have had the message titles and the series theme. And this was pretty easy because we just built on something of culture. You don't always have to build on culture. I think if you're always building on culture, you're out of balance. If you're never building on culture, you're out of balance. And some churches, it's like, you know, the fall lineup of television. All the shows are based around the television shows of the fall. That's okay every once in a while. But, you know, sometimes you need to do something else as well. And then 1 month out, you would begin collecting creative elements for the series based on message titles and themes. So if the title is I God Am All Present, what kind of creative elements do we have for that? Is there a song that talks about that? You know, is there a media clip? Is there a movie? Is there a drama that you have? Is there a dance that you might have? And then 3 weeks out, there's a creative planning meeting. And so your creative people, whoever they are, even if they're just volunteers. Early on, one of the best volunteers we had in our church is a guy who watched a lot of movies. That's a good volunteer to have. You know, and so, you know, these people are in every church. They just watch movies all the time. And you tell them, you know, I'm thinking about planning this sermon about God being all-knowing. And they think of some movie about that. You know, they think of some little clip or some little section or whatever. That's a really good person to have on your creative team. Having an artist, just some, you know, left-brained artist on your team who's just kind of out there. That's a good person to have on your volunteer team. For many years, Jason and I did this on Monday night. He's in the room as the worship leader. I'm there as the teaching pastor. We had someone who worked for, we had a big movie buff in our church. We had someone else who worked in the arts community. We had someone who was on Broadway, because that's a big arts area here where I'm at. And then just a couple other people that we threw in randomly who just had creative kind of thoughts. And we brought them into a room and we gave them the topics and we just let them brainstorm. And we wrote everything down. And we didn't make them a team. We only invited them to a meeting. That's very important. Don't put people on a creative team. Just invite them to a creative meeting. Because if you put them on a team, there's an expectation that they're going to be invited back. Well, maybe they suck, you know, and so you don't want to invite them back. So you just say, come once. And then a couple of months later, you invite them back again, or you don't invite them back again. And you put all the ideas on the board. And when you put all the ideas on the board, you don't critique the ideas. Well, that's a good idea. That's a bad idea. That's a good idea. That's a bad idea. No, you don't do that. You just put all the ideas on the board, and then you pray, and you thank them, and you send them home. And then later, you and your worship leader or whoever sits down and says, well, that's a good idea, that's a good idea. And you take the good stuff and you leave the bad stuff. And then you start this process of creative meeting and you gather the creative ideas. And then about 10 days out, you come up with a series-specific staging if you do that. And then you have props that are ready for the testing if you do it. All that goes into the series planning. So you just take that. You know, take the good, take the bad, take them both, and there you have. Anyway, never mind. Little facts of life joke. Anybody remember that from the 80s? Okay. So you take this, you just adapt it, but just have some plan for your church. It doesn't have to be this plan, but just some plan for your church. And then that parallels your Sunday planning timeline. I know this is very specific here, and it's hard to communicate timelines, but now let's say you're talking about a specific Sunday. You're not talking about the series now. You're talking about one message in the series. So let's say we're doing I God Am All Powerful. That's message number two in the I God series. So 3 weeks out, you would start having some research about the message. What are the key scriptures around God being all powerful? What are key quotes? What have theologians said about the omnipotence of God? Now, this message research team can be a volunteer in your church. You have volunteers in your church who love to feed you stories and quotes and theological ideas. A librarian, for example, is a great person to have on your message research team. Now, the problem is they can't get you this stuff at the last minute. You send it to them in advance. But we had a graduate student at Columbia who was part of our first message research team. And I would email her, you know, 4 weeks out. I'd say, hey, next week or you know, in a month from now or the next series we're doing is on this idea. Can you pull some stuff? And they have all kinds of software and the internet and all this kind of stuff, and people can do it. And they'll send you quotes, and they'll send you research, and they'll send you theological studies. You can use this or not use it, but it's just a really powerful thing to do if you can do it. But if not, you have it done. You have your research done. You know, what are the commentaries you need to read? What are the scriptures you need to study? What are the word studies you need to do? And you have all that done 3 weeks out before a message. And then 2 weeks out, you have specific music and creative elements planned. Now, let's talk about creative elements for just a second. Turn over to the next page, and I'll come back to this. Turn over to the next page, and you see seven creative elements in a worship service or in worship planning. And I'm going to give you these prioritized according to impact. And so what you can do is you can keep this list in front of you, and every time you're planning a sermon, you can say, can we pull one or two of these creative elements and use them in our service? Now, the first two you probably already have. Number one is music. What music are you going to have on Sunday? So if you're teaching about God being all powerful, what are the songs that go along with that? What are the songs that fit in with that? One of the things that we like to do is play secular music as people exit. Like, I have this theory that you can actually take a secular song and reframe it around a theological idea. Now, I can't think of a great example on this. I want to put Jason on the spot. It doesn't have to be I God. Can you think of any time we did this recently? Okay, yeah, we're talking about letting go of your past. And so we're talking about letting go of your past, and as people left, we played a song by the All-American Rejects, really popular at the time, called Move On. And so my hope was that maybe later that week, they're listening to that song on the radio, and they remember that sermon on Sunday. I love to take things of culture and frame them around biblical principles so that when people hear the things in culture later, they remember the biblical principle. And, you know, it's tricky. You've got to be careful. You know, some songs you can't play in church. But, it's just a good kind of thing. And sometimes, you know, like, you can just have a lot of fun with this. One time I did a fellowship sermon about how the church is a family. and how family has a responsibility for each other. We take care of our own. And then, you know, we played We Are Family as you left. And as silly as that song was, you know, all throughout the week, people were telling me, like, they were singing that song in their head. You know, We Are Family, you know, the song. And so, you know, you can do stuff like that. We did a message one time about husbands respect your wives. Our wives respect your husbands. I think it was how it works, actually, in Ephesians. But that's our problem. We've got it all messed up. No, we did the thing, you know, wives respect your husbands. So guess what we played as people left, you know, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. I mean, if people remember that, you know, as they left. So you can do music. But then, of course, primarily we're talking about the worship music that goes around, the songs that you're actually going to sing in the service. But you can also have other music around the service. The second creative element, of course, is the sermon. Really, you've got to have these first two or you don't have a worship service, in my opinion. I argue with our team as to which one should be number one. Maybe sermon should be number one and music should be number two. But if God doesn't inhabit the praise of his people, then you start with praise and then you go to the word as part of that. So those are ones, of course, you would have guessed. Number three, I think the third most powerful creative element you can have in any worship service is a live or recorded testimony. A live or recorded testimony from somebody in your church. I think testimonies are underused in a huge way. And so it's one thing for me to get up and teach a biblical principle and say, this is the way it is. It's quite another thing for the person you've been sitting beside in the audience to stand up and say, here's how I use this biblical principle in my life. In a day where everything is relative, testimonies are still real. And testimonies are very, very powerful. And I don't think we use them enough. We don't use them enough at our place. Maybe you do, but I think testimonies are very powerful. Now, if you don't want to trust a person to do a live testimony, you can record their testimony. And if it's a very emotional testimony, you might want to record it. We recorded a guy who tried to commit suicide one time, a testimony about that. And it was so emotional for him to have to tell that over the course of four services would have been impossible. So we sat down and filmed him for like 20 minutes telling the story, and then you got a good editor and a director, and they get that down to a really powerful 4 or 5 minute story that just really grips everybody. And sometimes at the end of a recorded testimony, when the lights come back up, I'll be standing there with the guy who actually told the story. And so everybody sees that he's a real person, and sometimes they applaud or, you know, they can talk with him afterwards about that story. And so, you know, it doesn't matter if it's live or recorded, but that's a new option you have in our day. Number four in the priority list is known media. Known media. And by that, I'm primarily talking about clips from movies. You have to be really careful with copyrights here, especially when it comes to copyrights for television shows. It's almost impossible to get a copyright to show television shows. We made some mistakes in this early on. New York is not a great city to make mistakes when it comes to copyrights. So, you know, I've gotten my fair share of cease and desist letters because we just, you know, we messed up on it. We were well-intentioned, so now we have to be more careful. But showing a clip from a movie, like if there's a clip that illustrates your sermon point and it's got a known character in it that it suddenly everybody knows, that just immediately they have an affinity to that. People feel like they know these characters, you know. And our guys are so creative. They come up with these obscure movies that nobody's ever heard of. And I will occasionally use them, but in the order of priority, I'd rather have a summer blockbuster or a big movie or a well-known movie star in the clip because people feel like they can relate to it. Now, don't use media just for the sake of media. If it doesn't illustrate the point or it doesn't move the sermon along or it doesn't move the big idea along, just don't use it. You know, save it for the banquet or save it for some leadership meeting, but don't use it on Sunday unless it actually goes to the point. Next, number five is original media. Original media. This is stuff you produce in-house, like your baptism videos, other testimonials like we were talking about, man-on-the-street interviews with people in your church, that kind of thing. The problem with original media is it's hard to do. It's not as easy. Cutting a clip from a movie is really easy to do. You got some kid in your church who's got a Mac. You know, they can figure out how to do that really simple. Original media is a little more intense, and if you can't do it well, just don't do it. Number six is drama. I think drama is good, but I'd rather have a live person tell a story. Drama is really hard, too. You know, it's really hard to get right. It's hard to mic. It's just really difficult. But if it's done, it can be a great element. And then number seven is everything else. Everything else. Be as creative as you want to be. You know, have somebody painting during your service. Have somebody sculpting during your service. Have somebody tell a poetry. We had a deaf poet one time. Do a thing, like a deaf poetry jam rap thing. I don't even know what it was, but it was a big hit. You know, we've had hip-hop stuff. We've had dance. you know, be as creative as you want to. I believe if God sends you an artist in your church, find a way to maximize them and use them in that service. But understand the priority of it. And so a testimony is more powerful than a drama. Known media is more powerful than an original media. The music is more important than the dance piece or whatever in that. So just give you those elements in worship. But try to add some of those elements in if you haven't done so recently. So back on page 12. We're in the third bullet. 2 weeks out, the first draft of the message notes is due. 2 weeks out, the first draft of the worship order is due. 5 days out, the final draft of message notes is due. 5 days out, the final draft of the worship order, we're talking about this specific Sunday, is due. 5 days out, there's specific prayer for the service. You know, if you haven't done this in a while, pray over every element in your service. There's make your worship order your prayer guide for the week. Pray for that song. Pray for that transition. Pray for that specific part of your service. Pray for your offering. Somebody told me they did that recently. You know, pray for your offering. If you don't do that, you know, if you haven't done that in a while, do that. Have a 3 days out. Have a final meeting to go over everything. And this I call this a production meeting. But everybody who's going to be involved in the service on Sunday, meet together and go over everything. And this is, for many years, this was like a Thursday night meeting because everybody was volunteer. So all, you know, whoever's going to be leading the band, whoever's going to be doing the Def Jam poetry thing, whoever's giving their testimony, whoever teaching, it may not be a big meeting, just two or three people, but sit down and go over it. Do the run through. This is what they do. Like, this is what actors do. They have the reading, you know, of the script. And so you sit down and you go over it and you make sure everybody knows what they're doing. And you're amazed at the kind of questions that come up during that time. Because many times the difference between a good service and a great service is in the transitions. I don't have anything in here on transitions. We have a big worship resource about transitions that talks about some of this stuff. But transitions can be very important. 3 days out, have the final message manuscript completed. Do a trial run of the message. For those of you who are teachers, shame on you if you're not doing a trial run of the message. You're doing your first draft in front of the people on Sunday. That's not the best, you know. I'm pretty certain it'll get better if you worked at it, if you did it in advance. You know, you need to practice flying the plane in the simulator before you take the plane up in the air for real. Hang on with me. I'm getting there. Okay. So the question is, do you do it by yourself? I've got a little section on that here in a second because apparently that caught some traction. 3 days out, have everything finalized for Sunday. Now, let me talk about this for a second. Create a rule in your church where there's a certain point where everything has to be done by. When we were about a year old, we were running, you know, I don't know, 60 people or so. We tried to have everything done by Saturday at noon. That was our goal. Because if you have things done by Saturday at noon, that gives you a little bit of buffer to fix the problems that are going to occur between 1 o'clock on Saturday and 7 o'clock on Sunday morning. And so, you know, you have to do that. So we were saying, can we get everything done by Saturday at noon so that Saturday night's actually relaxing? That'd be a nice touch, right? It's relaxing. You know, you're done. Well, then Saturday at noon became Friday at 5, and then it became Friday at noon. And then for a while, we were trying to do Thursday at noon, but that was just impossible to do in our structure. And so we have this thing called the Thursday midnight rule. Now, 90% of what we're doing is done by 5 o'clock on Thursday, but the band rehearses on Thursday night. And so sometimes they have to make tweaks, so we're giving them a little buffer, you know, to make those finalized tweaks. And we don't hit this all the time. I would say that maybe 60% of the time we don't hit it, but we aim for it, you know. And so by aiming for the Thursday midnight rule, Friday can be a real relaxed day around the office. And you'll be amazed at how many problems are solved on Friday that we didn't even anticipate on Thursday, because the majority of the service is done. So now it's just a fine-tuning. It's just a relaxing thing. And also it means that Friday's more relaxed, so our people can be creative for the upcoming weeks on Friday. And so we can do a lot of creative stuff on Friday. You don't have to do Thursday midnight. Just try to do something. You know, let's just say Sunday at 8 a.m. we're going to have everything done. You know, and then back it up. Saturday at 5, Saturday at noon. We have a podcast on this. And in my follow-up email to you, I'll send you a link to that podcast. For those who are listening on audio, you can just go to churchleaderinsights.com and you can find that podcast in the store. But anyway, just something to think about. And then you have, of course, the Sunday service. So here's a question for you. Who's going to lead this process in your church? Who's going to lead this process in your church? Who has the authority to run this process? Who's going to hold everybody accountable? Because somebody's going to have to. And that leads me to four requirements of an effective worship planning system. Number one is constant conversation between the pastor and worship leader. If there are some issues between the pastor and the worship leader, it's going to show up on stage. You know, it just is, it's just going to. So you got to keep that relationship strong. There has to be high accountability among staff and volunteers. You say, what's the difference between how I hold staff accountable and how I hold volunteers accountable? The answer is there is no difference. If you really believe that Sunday matters, you hold the same level of accountability to your volunteers. Some of you are, have been afraid to hold your volunteers accountable. But if Sunday really matters and you've really convinced them of this vision and philosophy that you're going to talk to them about, then hold them to that level of accountability. If somebody doesn't have their testimony manuscript in by Thursday midnight, they don't get to give their testimony on Sunday. If the drama team hasn't rehearsed by Thursday midnight, they don't get to do the drama on Sunday. You have to hold this accountability level tight. And by the way, the first couple times you do it, it's going to hurt. After that, everybody will get the point, and they'll fall into a line. There has to be a culture of punctuality. Tough for me, tough for all of us. Get your stuff in on time. Get your notes in on time. And then a commitment to excellence. And if everybody's committed to honoring God on Sunday and glorifying God as best as possible on Sunday, this won't be a problem. Now, let's talk about this trial run of a sermon. Since Anthony brought that up, I happen to have a whole page on it here on page 14. I don't have a lot in the worship planning about sermons itself. Maybe sometime in the future I'll do a whole resource or something just on sermons, because I've got a lot on that. But, you know, everybody has a different sermon style. So, again, this is not a seminar about style. It's a seminar about having a system. But, you know, here's what I believe. Somebody always pays the price for a good sermon. Whenever you hear a good sermon, somebody paid the price for that sermon to be good. You, as the teaching pastor, will either pay the price in preparation, or your people will pay the price in having to listen to you. Somebody's going to pay this price. So what are you doing to make sure that you're putting your best foot forward, literally, on a Sunday morning? Well, I think one of the best things you can do is do a sermon trial run. Teach your sermon ahead of time. And so here's how you do it. I won't hit all of these. But, you know, schedule a time, complete the manuscript, gather the creative elements. Plan to audio or video yourself as you do it. When was the last time you listened to yourself on audio? Now, it's a humbling thing. You know, I've got a bunch of audio resources, and it's a humbling thing to listen to yourself on audio. But you're never going to get better if you don't listen to yourself on audio. Some of you are teaching pastors, and you've been critiquing me all morning because I have my habits. I had a speech impediment growing up, so I have to work really hard to say certain words. And sometimes I have these awkward pauses before words, just trying to get the word to come out right. I used to say right instead of right. You know, you see how that works? I used to drop ing words off the end, you know. And so a word would just trail off, you know. And I don't know, we had some words up here. Instead of saying exciting, it would be exciting. You know, this is going to be an exciting, you know, this is going to be an exciting sermon. You know, where'd that ing go? And, you know, it just drops off. We all have our habits, us and ahs, you know, we all have these things. They're little hobby horses that we ride just to try to get to the next thought, you know. I went through a whole period of time one time where my goal was just to pause instead of say us. Like that was, I was practicing. Instead of saying, just to try to pause. Now, I still work at it. I still struggle at it. But shouldn't we struggle at it? Shouldn't we work at it? I mean, I want to be a better teacher a year from now than I am now. The only way I know to do that is to listen to myself and to watch myself. I mean, I might be doing weird things with my shoulders while I'm teaching. That's pretty distracting. You know, I'm trying to get a big, here's the biggest point of the day. Listen, guys, you know, you got to get this here. For those in the audio, I was just shrugging my shoulders, you know, crazy. But sometimes we do that. Shirt itches a little bit, you know, got that thing on our back, you know. And you don't know that unless you watch yourself. Maybe you're doing something goofy with your hands, you know. And Eve went to get the apple, you know. I don't know. Maybe you're holding your notes like this. This is not good, you know. You don't want to hold your notes like this. You're not going to know that, you know. Guy's holding his Bible like this, you know. Sacrilegious at best. So you got to watch yourself, okay? And then, you know, maybe you preach this by yourself. Maybe you do preach it by yourself. I do a lot of sermon run-throughs by myself, and then I listen to the audio or watch the video afterwards, and I try to put myself in the mind. One of the reasons that some of you are not at the best level or not the best communicator that you can be is because you're too reliant on the audience. And so some people say, well, I can't teach unless there's an audience. Well, I say, you know, audience of one. I mean, I'm teaching to honor God. And so if I'm dependent on the audience to give me feedback for my teaching, I need to break that habit and depend on God to be honored in my teaching. So, you know, when you're doing the trial run, just teach it as if you're preaching it to the Lord. That's a pretty good principle anyway, said the Apostle Paul. But gather an interested audience if you can. Sign a timekeeper. Deliver the sermon exactly as planned for the upcoming Sunday. Elicit positive and constructive feedback. Pray together for the Sunday and then re-edit the manuscript. Give this a shot and let me know how it goes. I like to record it and then, you know, I like to listen to it two or three times before Sunday. I just put it in the iPod now. It's so easy, you know, just listen to it over and over if I get it right. Sometimes I do two or three run-throughs. So, most of the time, the feedback I get makes my sermon infinitely stronger. That illustration didn't work. Here's a better joke for you. Here's a better story to tell. Say it this way. Put that there and that there, you know. Be careful when you read that scripture. You tend to pronounce that word weird. You know, things like that. So you want good feedback. So what can I do, what can you do this week to improve the quality of your sermons? It's a good question. And then here's a little homework for you. What's your Sunday routine? This is for those of you who are speakers. You know, just like a home run hitter on a Major League Baseball team has a routine. What's your Sunday routine? One of the things I tell our staff is that Sunday is too important for you to be out all night on Saturday. You know? So what are you doing on Saturday night that's going to affect Sunday? That doesn't mean you can't play, but just, you know, make sure you have reason as far as. For example, I try to cut off drinking at 6 p.m. on Saturday. I just try to end it right there, you know. And so after 6 p.m., I just don't drink at all. I'm just joking. It's 7 p.m. Anyway, no, I'm just joking at all. I don't really drink, never have been. But anyway, you know, what are you going to do? Like, you know, when I was a kid, I always ate Pop-Tarts and drank chocolate milk. That's what I did every morning, you know, Pop-Tarts and chocolate milk, except for the day we had the big achievement test. You know the days you had the big achievement test in school, remember that? My mom would cook for us on those days. And it would be like eggs and bacon and hash browns and butter and toast and all this kind of stuff, you know? That was probably the worst possible thing I could eat before I go take a big test. Because, like, if nothing else, my cholesterol was sky high. I'm still trying to take that test, doze it off, you know, because it was so different than what I normally do. You know, what do you need to do to give yourself energy for a Sunday morning? You know, you have to be careful with that. Like, I'm at this point now where I like to eat small meals because we do four services. So eat a little meal, do the first service, maybe have a little snack and do the next service or whatever. You know, you kind of want to manage your energy on Sunday. Maybe you need to get up and take a walk, get things going, you know, listen to some inspirational music. Figure out your routine on a Sunday morning and then look at how that affects the rest of your day because it will. Somebody told me the first hour of your day is like a rudder on a ship. It's going to determine where you end up at night. And so especially on a Sunday morning, you know, you just want to have that routine. I like to be I'm so finicky about this. I like to be a little cold in the house on Sunday morning. I don't like to get dressed on a Sunday morning when it's kind of hot, you know. So I just like to have these routines. And so just figure out what that is for you. For example, I've worn the same pair of socks for 6 years now on a Sunday morning. Just not going to change them. Sermons haven't gotten any better, but, man, I feel good about those socks. Bill Hybels said this, and I'm paraphrasing because I couldn't find this in print, so I had to transcribe this from a tape. He's a tape. Who has tapes anymore? See, you know, a CD or something. He said, move me, scare me, inspire me, convict me, stir me, anger me, surprise me, ignite me, thrill me. Just don't leave me the way you found me when I walk through your doors. And he's saying that's what the person in your auditorium says when they come in. You know, just don't leave me the same. I write this, the power of Sunday. Sunday is game day. It's impact time. It's evangelism hour. It's resurrection day. It's prime time. It's focal point. It's the Super Bowl, World Cup, and World Series all rolled into one. Sunday matters. This Sunday matters. So that's what all this planning is about. That's what all this preparation is about. That's what the hard work of doing the run-through and the preparation, the 2 weeks out and the 2 months out, it's all about Sunday. And the goal is a life-transforming worship service every Sunday. Trust the Spirit, but plan in advance. You see that tension? You know. Any questions on that? Okay, you got some homework to do if you're going to do this proper. So you got to go back and work through step number 3. But now let's move on to something that's pretty fun, which is what happens after Sunday. Because a lot of churches, they have Sunday and they never think about Sunday. I've had sermons that I never wanted to think about again. You know. I've walked off the stage and said, let's never talk about what just happened. It's like a train wreck, you know, on that Sunday. But the problem is that doesn't help you. You don't get any better. And so number 4 is evaluating and improving the services. Or, as I say in the notes, improving and evaluating the services. Ken Blanchard, who just came out with a great leadership book that I put in your bibliography, has this quote. He says, feedback is the breakfast of champions. Man, I don't like feedback. I am too insecure to like feedback. I don't like you to tell me what I've done wrong. I just want you to tell me what I did right. Exactly right. That's deep, right? That's deep. But Proverbs 12, verse 1 says, to learn, you must love discipline. It's stupid to hate correction. And so I don't want to be stupid. So I've got to learn to take correction. And I really believe this in your notes. There is no excellence without evaluation. While the goal is to be excellent every Sunday, the reality is that excellence happens through small improvements week after week. And so if you have a worthy goal, and I think a worthy goal is this, look like a church twice my size. Look like a church twice my size. That's sort of a moving target, but you know, if you're a church of 25, try to look like a church of 50. If you're a church of 65, try to look like a church of 125. If you're a church of 500, try to look like a church of 1,000. You know, excellence is doing the best you can with what you've got. But excellence also means you stretch yourself and you aim for it. And the way you do that is through constant and never-ending improvement. And that's the principle of Kanai. The principle of Kanai is this, constant and never-ending improvement. C-A-N-E-I is the first letter of each one. Constant and never-ending improvement. Don't let the services become stale. Don't let the sermons become stale. Don't let the planning process become stale. Don't be satisfied with what you did last week, even if it was great. You know, that's what a pro tries to do. A pro tries to keep improving, keep moving forward. And the key on this is to have a culture of feedback. Now, creating a culture of feedback is very difficult. It's difficult to keep the balance between honoring the person and improving the result. It's very difficult. I want to honor what you did, but I want to help you improve the next time out. Do you see what I'm saying? You know, and this is especially difficult with kids. You know, you have kids. You want to honor what they did, but you want to help them improve next time. And so creating a culture of feedback in your church. Here's a few ways to do this. Plan a time for feedback. When are you going to evaluate the Sunday service? We like to do it on Mondays, you know, get it over with as soon as we can. But when are you going to do it? You know, it can be on a Monday night. It can be on a Sunday afternoon. But let's watch the game tape, and let's plan a time to do it. So start this with prayer. Oh, Lord, forgive us for what we did on Sunday. Please help us to do better next week. Be grateful for the feedback. Look, I'm serious. I'm grateful for feedback. If I'm doing something stupid, I want to know, you know. I mean, I really want to know because I don't want to keep doing it. You know, I want to improve it. I want to change it. So be grateful. God, you know, help us to have good minds today. And we're grateful for the feedback we're going to get. The best way to kind of put down the personal feedback is to be your toughest critic. When I walk into a feedback meeting, I like to put all the stuff I did wrong on the board first. You know, let me just go ahead and tell you, this is what I think I did wrong, you know. And that way it just sort of puts it down. That way I was my toughest critic. Give feedback that's specific. You know, you taught a sermon on Sunday and somebody tells you, you know, that sermon just didn't really connect. What do you mean it didn't connect? I mean, that's just very vague, you know. How about, you know, when you told that story about you and your son on the playground and you met the other couple? I didn't really get the point of that. You see the difference between vague, general stuff and very specific stuff. And give feedback that is helpful. Like, you know, it's not helpful to say it just didn't connect. Say, you know, if you had just told it a little bit different, or, you know, when you drove home the point, I was in a meeting with some other pastors recently, and we were watching a guy teach, and he got so excited telling the story that when he gave his main point, he actually turned his back on the congregation because he stepped out to tell this really powerful story, and he said, and that means that God loves us a lot, and he just turned around to his notes, you know. Well, I wanted him to stay out here and say, that means God loves us a lot. You know, and so tell a story, you know, and so that was helpful feedback. Like, don't turn your back. You know, deliver the point. Don't get so caught up delivering the story. Now, he was so excited about the story. He had to get back to his notes to find out where he went next. And so it has to be, you know, it has to be helpful. You've been there, right? So focus on the issue, not the person. It's always hard for me. You're just an idiot. That's the problem. No. You just didn't know how to work the new soundboard. That's the problem. Ensure action for each point of feedback. What do you really want to do? Because just giving the feedback's not enough. Who's going to take action to make sure it happens? Okay, you know, the the transition didn't go as well as we thought. Or, you know, this is a big one we have a lot of times. The musicians go to unplug their cables and what? Pop, pop, pop. And the whole audience wakes up, you know, which is really good if the service has been bad so far. But, you know, you don't want that to happen. So who next week is going to make sure that when that song ends, the mute button is pushed on all the instruments? Somebody has to be assigned that. It has to be accountability. I go over in a sermon. I had 35 minutes. I took, you know, 58. Somebody ought to hold me accountable for making sure that happens. And then seek feedback as a way to honor God. And as long as you're doing that, you're fine. So when do you evaluate? When do you evaluate? Well, you want to evaluate in your pre-planning. You know, before Sunday ever happens, do a little evaluation. How's this going to come across? What's that going to look like from the end result? Are we ready? You want to evaluate in the sermon trial run. You know, what went right in the trial run of the sermon? You want to evaluate during rehearsal. You know, sometimes if you're in a portable facility, or even if you're not, you get there on Sunday morning and you kind of do a little quick trial run. If not, you might try that. We have to do it because we have to set up and tear down every Sunday. So we have to test all the instruments and we kind of do a trial run. Well, during the rehearsal, you know, maybe you need to change something. Okay, you need to move that. You need to shift back here. You need to stand in the light. You need to project more. You need to be out here faster, whatever it is. During setup or the Sunday rehearsal, during the weekly rehearsal as well. Now, between services, how many of you are doing multiple services right now? Okay, we got a few in here. If you conduct multiple services, each service should get better because of the feedback you received after the first one. So a lot of times after the first service, I'm trying to get people to give me feedback. And we actually plant people in the audience to do that. Sometimes it's our staff, but I want to meet with them. What didn't go right in that first service? Because a lot of times you can change a lot of stuff before the second service. We have four services now. You ought to see how good I am by 7 o'clock at night. I mean, I'm really good at that fourth service because I've been getting feedback all day long. Now, that's no excuse for me to not give the first service my best foot forward. And that's what's real tempting to do after four services. You say, well, I'll just do the first one, then we'll fix it. Well, that's not really good. Fix it on Thursday and then do it right on Sunday. But if you have multiple services, that's a great time to get feedback. And then, of course, after each Sunday, that's primarily what we're talking about, going over the game tape for each Sunday. And then after each series, you know, sit down after the series ends and say, what could we have done better in planning the series? How could we adjust our timeline, adapt our timeline? What do we need? So here's four really good evaluation questions. Four really good evaluation questions. I like to put these up in four boxes because, you know, everything's four boxes in my mind. Anyway, first question is, what went right? So you had this whole board here, and you put up in this corner, what went right? Let's go over all the good things that happened on Sunday. And then once you do that question, take just a moment to stop and pray and celebrate all the things that went right. Yeah, God, we're grateful for that. And you've got to train your people to not only give feedback on what went wrong, but you got to train them to give feedback on what went right. Because you don't want to create a culture of critique. Critique is different than feedback. Complaining is different than feedback. So I want this right list to be as long as possible. Matter of fact, if you, let me give you these others and we'll look at this. And then what went wrong? What was missing? And what was confusing? So once you do right, do these next three all at the same time. What was wrong, what was missing, and what was confusing? That's what I say in the paragraph just below. There'll be some people that love to tell you what's wrong. They'll be quick to do it. Other people will never tell you what's wrong, but they'll tell you what's missing and what's confusing. So what was missing and what was confusing is just a different way to get at what went wrong. And then once you've got that list up on the board, assign every wrong, missing, or confusing item to an individual and hold them accountable for that coming for fixing that before the coming Sunday. Does that make sense? It's a very powerful thing. Even if you only improve 50%, and if you only get 10% of what you got on the board done, at least you made improvement. Work on it next week. Now, we're at a point now at our staff, because a lot of our people are paid guys and ladies that are in the room, that if it's on the board wrong, missing, and confusing for 2 or 3 weeks in a row, that's a pretty big problem. You know, we're going to have a conversation if you keep making the same mistake over and over. Now, working with volunteers, you got to give them a little more slack. But say, okay, you know, we don't want this to keep appearing on the board. And so you got peer pressure and you got accountability and you got everything working in your favor to make this right. If you turn over in your appendix, let's see, what page is that? Maybe on page 22. I had to put this in small print because there's so much stuff. But here's a recent right, wrong, missing, and confusing debrief from a Sunday back in April. So you see everything that went right. And then you see all the stuff that was wrong, missing, and confusing. And you see out beside it are all these initials. That's who's responsible for it. Some of you will see yourself in here, okay? Under that wrong, I always laugh at this one. The last one under wrong is the base head fell off. Just fell off, you know? Just, you know? What do you do when that happens, you know? So we assigned that. A couple of guys had to fix that week. You know, 10 o'clock, no pastors at the back announcement. That was missing. You know, the mic pack was missing at one of the services. Memory verse cards weren't there. There's that bass head again falling off the speaker. You know, some things were confusing. You know, I don't know how clapping on stage was confusing, but maybe they weren't on the beat or something. You know, I don't know. But it just all gets put on the board. And the best way to do this is not to wait to the evaluation meeting. What I like to do on Sunday is I like to carry a little index card around in my pocket. And I'm writing this down as we go. So what goes wrong in setup? What was missing? What was confusing? And then I just bring that list to the meeting on Monday. And so train your people to have their little cards. Somebody, they see somebody doing something right, write it down. Congratulate them right there on Sunday. And then go forward with this. So it takes you a little while to get in the flow. But once you figure it out, it's a really powerful exercise. Any questions on this before we wrap up? Okay, look back on page 16. The last sentence on page 16, I think, is worth noting. When it comes to worship services or anything else in life, you don't get what you expect, you get what you inspect. And so if you're not evaluating and improving, you're never going to move closer to excellence than you are right now. And so keep working on that. And let me know how that goes. I'd love to hear how some of this stuff goes. If you ever want me to evaluate your preaching calendar, for those of you who are in that, feel free to send it over. I'd be glad to take a look at it. So let's look at the conclusion. It's on page 17 of your notes. I've thrown a lot at you today. I've given you a lot of homework. This may be the most homework-intensive seminar that I've ever done. But this thing that we do of worship really matters. Sunday really matters. What we're involved in, even though we handle it week after week, we're handling holy things. And so I just want to remind you of that and give you kind of a vision of that from Psalm 40, verses 1 through 4. Again, it's a long passage, but you did so well earlier. Let's read it out loud together. Here we go. I waited patiently for the Lord to help me, and he turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and the mire. He set my feet on solid ground and steadied me as I walked along. He has given me a new song to sing, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see what he has done and be astounded. They will put their trust in the Lord. All the those who trust the Lord, who have no confidence in the proud, are in those who worship idols. That's the power of worship. It's the power of repentance. It's the power of Sunday. It's the power of this activity that you and I are engaged in, that we've given our lives to. The power to cooperate with God, to see lives changed week after week, Sunday after Sunday in our church. And I thank you for making this investment of time. And I want to learn from you, and I hope you've learned something here today. And I just say to you, every Sunday, every step along the way in this worship planning process, remembers Proverbs 16:3, which is commit your work to the Lord, and then your plans will succeed. So let's do all that we can to help one another succeed and to support one another in doing life-transforming worship services every week. I want to pray for you, then Roy's going to come and give us some instruction about the next seminars. Let's pray. God, thank you for these churches that are here. I thank you for these leaders. I thank you for their eagerness to learn. I thank you for their openness to new ideas. I thank you for what you've said to them today. And I hope they've heard from me, but more importantly, I hope they've heard from you. And God, I pray that this Sunday will be a great Sunday, and that every Sunday after this, we will just honor you in the best way we can, honoring you through excellence, honoring you through calling people to repent, honoring you through our planning, honoring you through the worship that we offer. God, help us to live our lives to please an audience of one. And then may the whole world stand around and watch. And as Jesus is lifted up, may they all be drawn to him. And we pray in the powerful name of Jesus. Amen.